will note that the Justice Frydenberg will join the courts for this argument, and this is the first time Justice Frydenberg will be sitting with the court, so we welcome him for today's arguments and for his career with the court. With that in mind, we will proceed with State versus Alejandro Garcia. Is it Ms. Arango? Good morning to you. Yes, you may approach.
May it please the court, Jamie Arango on behalf of the defendant Alejandro Garcia. The appellant in this case claims three errors were committed by the district court upon appeal. Firstly, incorrectly applying the law of the case doctrine. The initial motion to withdraw resulted in a final order regarding the rights advisal given by the court in the issue of ineffective counsel. No final order had been given regarding the interpretation of the rights advisal. The defendant had no issue to, or opportunity to raise that issue on his initial appeal. What happened essentially was a motion was filed to withdraw a plea in the trial court in Platte County. That was an evidentiary hearing was held on that. That motion was based upon the preparation of a transcript by the Platte County Court. That preparation of that transcript did not include a rights advisal had been given prior to the defendant entering his plea. Based on that, the defendant entered a motion to withdraw that plea based on not having been given that advisal prior to the entry of his plea. At the evidentiary hearing, the court took the matter under advisal. The judge then listened to the audio recording of that hearing and discovered that the transcript was incomplete and that the rights advisal had been given prior to the defendant entering his plea, and so he dismissed the defendant's motion to withdraw a plea. At that point, counsel for the defendant requested the audio transcript of the hearing. Upon listening to the audio transcript of the hearing, agreed with the court that the warning had been given, but found that the interpretation of the warning was not correct. In fact, the interpretation of the warning was so incorrect that they did not advise the defendant that he would be removed from the United States if he pled guilty to the crime he was charged with.
Am I correct that there's no dispute that the advisement was properly given in English?
That's correct. There's no dispute on that.
What do you need to show under this statute in order to withdraw a plea? What are the required elements?
Under the statute, you have to, actually it's the court's burden to show that the defendant was given the rights advisal.
And in this case, he was.
In English. He was not given it in Spanish. He doesn't understand English.
Your claim is not a statutory claim. It's a due process claim, isn't it?
I believe it's both. In that, under the statute, the court has the burden to show that the warning was given, and we requested a Spanish transcript from the court. They refused.
The statute you're talking about doesn't say a single word about a foreign language, does it?
It does not. That is correct.
So it isn't a statutory claim. It's a due process claim, right?
In that manner, yes, it is a due process claim.
Okay.
What's the mechanism by which a due process claim would be raised?
Because
it's not under this statute.
Courts are required to provide a suitable interpreter for criminal defendants in criminal hearings. This interpreter was not.
And I understand that. My question goes to the procedural mechanism by which a due process claim that you're describing would be raised.
It's manifest injustice. It's manifest injustice that his constitutional rights to due process were violated because he was not given a suitable interpreter and his rights were not interpreted him correctly.
If that statute did not exist, would the court have erred or deprived him of his rights in any way by not telling him exactly what the court told him? Another way of stating my question is, the statute requires something that's not required otherwise. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, yes. But the statute does require it. The statute requires that the warning be given, and the warning was not given.
Is there a constitutional case to which you would direct us that would support your position?
Well, due process under the Sixth Amendment requires that a criminal defendant be advised of his rights. He can't enter a plea knowingly if he doesn't know the consequences of that plea. This plea was not entered knowingly. He did not understand the consequences of his plea.
I guess, that would be a broad statement. Is there a constitutional case in particular with respect to language to which you would address it?
I don't have a citation in front of me. I do think Padilla versus Kentucky does discuss this, but not at length. That is an ineffective assistance of counsel case, but it does also discuss the warning given by the court. I do not have a constitutional cite right now.
Is the sole basis for your contention that the translation was improper, the translation of that word removal, is that what the argument is based on? That it was, your argument is this, the word translated as expatriated and it should have been removal?
That is correct. That is one of the things. That was the one that had a direct consequence for this criminal defendant. I will say that rights advisal, there were many errors in the translation of that rights advisal. There were other things that he was not warned of, such as not being able to carry a firearm, not being able to vote. There were just multiple
things. But that's not in the statute.
No, in this for this defendant, those things did not apply, and they do not apply. But so our focus, yes, is on the fact that the word, instead of being told that he would be removed, he was told he would be expatriated. He's already an expatriate. He wasn't born in the United States.
But it said expatriated from the United States?
Not in the translation. So the translation says, yes, he'd be expatriated, but it doesn't say from the United States. So there's a whole sentence there that when translated in Spanish, the translation rearranges the words. So it does say you have the consequences of being expatriated, not allowed to be a citizen, or other immigration consequences of the United States or in the United States. It doesn't tell him that he'll be expatriated or removed from the United States. The translation, and courts translate this very rights advisal hundreds of times every day, and correctly so. So for this defendant to have been given this rights advisal so badly, and not just once, but two different times. It was the same translation at his arraignment as it was prior to him entering his plea. It's that this specific interpreter was reading from a script that was translated incorrectly.
In light of this counsel already served his sentence, how do you see the proceedings going if the court does vacate this conviction?
And that's muddy, I agree. It would have to be remanded, obviously, back to the district court, who I think needs to remand it back to the trial court for an evidentiary hearing, because we need a decision on these facts by the trial court, and we don't have that. So the trial court dismissed, saying that this was the second motion to withdraw, and it was substantially similar to the first, and the issue had already been decided, and so they were dismissing it. So there's no decision by any court on the factual basis of Mr. Garcia's motion to withdraw his plea.
So if the conviction's ultimately vacated, what further proceedings do you see?
His conviction is vacated,
then it allows him to withdraw his plea.
Yes, then we would actually file to reinstate his green card and wait and see what the state does next. I'm going to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klein, good morning to you.
Good morning.
May it please the court. Mr. Chief Justice, I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state in this matter. Your Honors, I think the district court did not earn, frankly could not earn, denying relief on this because none of the claims, frankly, were ever properly pled according to statute. 2918.19.02 has specific requirements. It says that if the court fails to advise the defendant as required by this section and the defendant shows that the conviction of the offense for which he pled guilty or no contest may have the consequence of removal from the United States or denial of naturalization. Well, that is completely lacking from any of the defendant's motions in this. So frankly, the district court couldn't have granted him relief because it was never presented with the proper pleadings for this. Secondly, this thing has been brought repeatedly and repeatedly, and the district court's final ruling was that this has been decided, the law of the case applies, we said no once, we meant no.
Which order are you contending has law of the case effect and can't be reconsidered?
It appears to me that it was the final order of the district court where it said, look, you already, which would be the denial of the motion to vacate, essentially. That was the third of the round of motions that were filed with the court. And the court, district court said, look, law of the case applies. When you filed your first motion to withdraw, we said no. And therefore, you haven't shown any substantial materially different facts than you did. Therefore, the law of the case applies, and we've already made our decision.
Were the allegations the same each time?
Yes, essentially they were.
And then remind me, what allegation, is there an allegation that would have had enough strength to proceed for consideration? What was missing?
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, I think you recited 29-18-19-02 and said you got to recite something, and then you have to also say something, another thing.
Oh, yeah.
So what are the things that were missing in your view?
What was missing is the allegation by the defendant that the conviction, in this case for third-degree domestic assault, may subject him to the consequence of removal from the country or from preventing him from becoming a naturalized citizen.
Failure to allege that he could be removed made the pleading insufficient. Is that your view?
From the outset, I think that's correct. And I think as you look at all three of the motion to withdraw, the motion for reconsideration, the motion to vacate, that is lacking in all of those. And frankly, if you look at the motion to vacate is essentially a motion to withdraw. If you read the statute, again, 29-18-19.02, the statute doesn't refer to a motion to vacate and withdrawal as separate entities. They are part and parcel of the same thing. So I think basically that reinforces the district court's ruling that the law of the case applies, and in this case, a motion to vacate is the same thing as a motion to withdraw because they essentially work together as part of the same thing. So while we slapped a different label on it, what we're asking for is exactly the same thing.
So it's the very definition of insanity, saying the same thing.
Kind of, yeah.
Without change, expecting a different result. Okay,
sure.
That's your view?
I don't know if I'd be quite that strident about it, but because you put a different label on it doesn't make it what you say
it
is.
The underlying pleading remained deficient, is that your view?
Yeah, it remained deficient, and it also is essentially asking for exactly the same thing it asked for in the motion to withdraw. So because you call it X doesn't mean it's X if you're asking for Y, which you already asked for.
Wasn't there a difference in the argument, though? I mean, the reason that the plea was initially sought to be withdrawn was that the advisement wasn't given at all, and then didn't later, once the audio tape become available, Mr. Garcia sort of switch horses and start arguing that the interpretation was incorrect.
No, actually, if you go back and look at the first motion to withdraw the plea, it's initially alleged essentially as an ineffective assistance of counsel claim because he says his attorney told him there would be no immigration consequence, and then he, towards the end of it, he also says that he wasn't given the proper advisement. He says his advisement was given 15 days prior to entering the plea, and it was given as a group advisement and read quickly by an interpreter, and he didn't understand it. So in some respects, it's a little bit of a different twist, and in some respects, it's starting the whole process of making the same claim. I wasn't given the advisement, or if I was, I didn't understand it. So the thing kind of morphs over time, but essentially, the facts of the claim basically are the same.
Was the group advisement in English?
It was in both.
Thank you.
According to the county court and the district court's records, it was read initially in English, and then literally minutes later, it was translated into Spanish. And according to the county court's, I think it's on the motion for the and it's a ruling on the motion to reconsider. It gives literally the time frames at which this happened, and the defendant's change of plea occurred about 7 minutes after it had been translated into Spanish for the, you know, for the group at the group advisement. So the county court held that it was very, very clearly done in Spanish, and the district court found a reason to doubt that that finding by the county court.
Your argument about the pleading requirements for this particular statute are based on the language of the statute and not anything that this court has previously said?
Well, the case law from this court does. I think it's Gonzalez from 2013 and Yuma, I think, from the same year, also talk about essentially reciting the statute, but you do recite the statute, and those requirements are within the statute, so that is something that is required to be...
So a motion in the language of the statute would be sufficient?
I would think so, yes.
But here it didn't contain that, is your argument?
Yes, that's correct.
And do you read the motion to be based exclusively on the relief provided in statute and on no other basis?
I guess it depends on which motion we're talking about.
The one that's been appealed.
Okay, that would be the motion to vacate. The motion to vacate, hang on a sec, let me... Motion to vacate, yeah, is essentially a repeat of the, I didn't understand the advisement. And that was, harkens back to the first one, where the district court said it was given, it was in Spanish. And I would note also that the record is very clear that, I believe it was at the motion for reconsideration, the defendant was offered the opportunity, specifically said, do you have any evidence to present? And none was given. And then finally, and so it was denied for lack of evidence. And then finally, on the third go-around, the motion to vacate, they got around to adducing, to getting some evidence together. This thing has just gone through multiple iterations and is essentially the same thing. He's just working his way towards getting together what he should have had to start with.
Well, let me be sure I understand. By the time the very first motion to vacate or set aside or withdraw the plea or whatever it was filed in the county court, mm-hmm. The defendant had already served the sentence, correct?
Yes.
So post-convict, he was not in custody?
Not at that time, no.
So he could not have then filed a motion for post-conviction relief?
Correct.
But he could have filed one during the time that he was in custody?
Yes. Yes. So the common law, that essentially, I assume you're driving at the common law remedy, would not exist because he had the opportunity to file for post-conviction relief.
Thank you.
He was given 60 days jail and given credit for 58 days already served. Was he ever in custody?
We don't have anything that says the jail has a receipt for him, but because there were 2 days in post that he hadn't served, I think the record would support that he had to do 2 more days, so he would have been in custody. Your Honors, if there are no additional questions, we would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
1 minute, 43 seconds.
1 minute and 43 seconds, Ms. Rango.
Your Honors, firstly, in regards to the pleadings, the motions to withdraw and the motion to vacate both specifically state that the defendant was ordered removed from the United States. That's the consequence that meets the second part of that pleading. He doesn't need to argue that he could have been removed because he was ordered removed from the United States. He's still in the United States because he's Cuban, and he cannot be removed at this time, but he could be removed at any time. And he does that order of removal was presented to the trial court as evidence.
Does that present a ripeness issue?
No, because he could still be removed at any time. Anytime relations improve with Cuba, they can instate his removal order and remove him from the United States. So he's still under an order of removal from the United States. And there's still consequences of that. So he has to check in periodically with immigration in Omaha. He's not able to ever get citizenship or naturalization, any type of permanent residency in the United States. He will forever be under an order of supervision with an order of removal in the United States. As far as the titles of the motions, I think the state gets hung up on the titles of the motions, and the purpose of the motions are the same, but the factual basis of those motions are very different. The factual basis are not the same. And the state arguing that the defendant could have brought this issue sooner, someone had to discover it first. So the only way to discover it, discovery was attempted and performed with the transcript, but the transcript was incomplete. The defendant had no way to know that that transcript was incomplete. It's by the rule of law, that is the best record of the court proceedings, and he relied on that.
Is the incomplete transcript in our record?
I'm sorry?
Is the incomplete transcript in our record? We have a record that includes the rights advisement.
It should, yes. So the incomplete transcript was the first transcript that was provided. I don't know if it was corrected for you or not, but the original transcript is incorrect. Thank you.
Is there also a firearm restriction upon the defendant because of the nature of the offense?
There is, yes.
That is still existing at this point.
That is true, yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much.